Jonathan, hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.
Hello, welcome to Bagel Tech Photo, the smug and arrogant show from the Bagel Tech Network that deals with all of your questions and news. And thanks to the review, you're a brick, Jeremy. Well, it rhymes with brick anyway. We're sitting talking to a fantastic bunch of assembled professional photographers. We're going to go through this week's photography news, and we're going to go through your questions that you sent us. And it's 2011. Happy New Year, fellas.
It's probably 2012.
No, it's not exactly. Oh, that's got to do it. Should we start again? Yeah, 2012. What a year it's going to be, I feel. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's the last year of the world, so.
Yeah. I saw a great tweet the other day from a guy who was a White House speechwriter, and he said, if the Mayans were so great, there'd be Mayans. So, good point. Top left, Chris Forsman. How you doing, pal?
Pretty good this morning. I managed to get up and get showered, so.
Christmas is PJ's month.
Yeah, but, well, that's over already. We had the Christmas, we had the New Year's, now it's like back to the grind.
Yeah, absolutely. you don't get a Boxing Day though, do you, sir, in the States?
No.
Yeah.
No, Boxing Day.
But you just skived off work from what I saw in the tweets.
I worked.
Cool.
I worked.
Next to him, rushing back off the bus from a job. Didn't think he was going to make it, but here he is, Mr. Alex Fox.
Hello. I'm here.
How's your week been, mate? You've been busy.
It's been stupidly. I don't know what's going on.
I'm jealous.
It's 2012 and people expect me to work. I was told off for saying that. No, we all would work really hard and we all should be grateful for everything we've got. I remember now. Sorry, I'll take that all back.
Yeah, no, we are. We absolutely are. We absolutely are. And last but by no means least, below him, Kevin Newsom from Florida. How you doing, mate? New man on the podcast.
Great. Yes, yes.
You're a photographer in Florida.
Yeah, Florida. Florida's a sweet place to be.
You got the weather photography, haven't you? Definitely.
It's been nice. It's been nice. It's been unseasonably warm this year, but that's a welcome.
All right, shut up. That'll do. me and Alex spend our whole time trying to get rid of the grayness in the pictures that we've taken. So
right.
Not toned down the sun.
True story. I used to live in Orlando when I was a wee lad.
Right. And? Is that where you got you taking
Mickey
pictures?
Mouse.
I'm just saying I know what he's talking about when it comes to always having great light in Florida.
Very good. The Week in Photography News. It's been a hell of a week. There's an exhibition in London that has banned the use of sketching exhibitions to level the playing field, though, with the photographers who are always banned, of course. And there's been a whole pile of other stuff. Not to mention... Alex, finally, Nikon D4, mate. You were salivating about this yesterday when I spoke to you, so what do you think now?
It's
all right, isn't it? The way you were going on yesterday about, I'll take the D800, but I want the D4, and when are they going to come out with this?
Well, the thing is, I actually want the D4S, but they've got to bring out the baby model first, haven't they? They've got to bring out the cheap, low-resolution model before they bring out the good one, haven't they?
So do you want to give us your first impressions, mate, as our resident Nikon man?
Well, my first impression is, right, they are improving in... they're even improving a really, really good camera, and they have managed to make it better. And what they've done, which I really do like, is they've just improved the quality of every component rather than the numbers. Yes, it is a 16 megapixel, and, you know, that's fair enough, but it's 16 of the best megapixels you're going to... Shut up, Chris.
What are you laughing at?
I'm Alex G. Fox. 16 pixels isn't good enough for me.
Nah. Well, you know, horses for courses. We've seen your work. We know that an iPhone 3 is good enough.
Ouch.
No, but, you know what they've done, they've improved the insides of this camera, if you like. They've made something that's ultra fast. The processing is incredible. You know, they've devised a whole new sensor. And you know, every one of the important numbers, which, you know, let's face it, isn't necessarily the megapixels, every one of the important numbers are there, and that they're better than they've ever been, and they're better on any other SLR that's ever been in existence. I look forward to getting my hands on one, but in reality, I do look forward to, they normally bring out a higher megapixel version, which is slightly slower, and 16 megapixels isn't really enough for the photo libraries that I shoot for. So if they bring out a sort of a 25 to 35 megapixel version of this, you know, I'll tear their arms off for it.
So, I mean, are we saying that this is pitch at the pro or not pitch at the pro then?
Oh, this is pitch at the pro, but this is more
on the price.
Yeah, but it's more of a sports camera. It's more for sports photography or paparazzi photography. It's more for the photography where you need to capture an extraordinarily good quality image, but the resolution, speed of capture is an issue. The speed of, you know, how many shots per second you can get is more important than the end resolution. I need something that will work better in a studio, so therefore I don't care if it takes 11 shots a second or one shot a second. It makes no difference to me.
Right, yeah.
So this is more for the taking sports cars going around tracks photography. But it's just an amazing, amazing accomplishment.
Kev, what do you shoot, mate? Are you a Canon man, a Nikon man, or are you taking a different road?
I'm a Nikon man. I've been shooting. I started out digitally with Canon. I did. My first digital camera was a Canon D30.
Classic.
$3,000 for a 3.5 megapixel. It was amazing. But I jumped to Nikon, went to D1X, and then I've had the D100, the D2X, and the D300. I'm anxiously looking forward to the D800 right now.
So yes. You're going to skip the D4 as well. I mean, Alex is going on about the D800 a lot as well as, so.
Now, I've always enjoyed Nikon. I was a little bit miffed that for a long time Canon was kicking their butt in the high resolution department. The D700 came out and finally leveled the playing field a little bit, but I never did upgrade to the D700. I'm still shooting in my studio with a D2X and a D300 for a lot of location work and outdoor stuff where I need to worry about high ISOs.
Yeah. Chris, what's your, because I mean, you were making lots of ums and ahs before we started about this. Are you excited or not bothered?
I would say I'm hot and bothered.
Ooh.
Can I say that hot and bothered? Is that?
So you're jumping ship then? You're going for the Nikon? You're right there with me.
I'm not sure I can afford to jump ship, but if I could, I probably would.
I mean, this is a real big push towards video as well, isn't it? I mean, it's got the extendable camera on the top now with the link in. Chris Dickey's going to be wondering whether it gives him a monitoring feedback or not, I guess.
And then it does. It gives you a stereo monitoring feedback.
I hadn't read that bit, then that's good for him. But they've gone exclusively with the new XQD card format. Is that going to upset a few people?
Well, they haven't gone exclusively. It's still dual slot.
Yeah, no, they've got the SD card, but there's no compact flash slot anymore.
Well, I suppose that's what the XQD is designed to take.
Oh, no, I've got it the wrong way around. They haven't gone SD. Sorry, my mistake.
No.
Yeah, they've gone XQD and compact flash, but they haven't gone for SD.
Well, that's good that Sony announced those new XQD cards this morning, too.
Yeah, like they weren't going to be coming.
Yes.
Nikon develop a whole new camera and then Sony don't deliver the card.
I don't think, to be honest, and I don't think SD is up to the job for this camera. It's certainly not up for the job for the video. There's no way it could record the video on an SD card. There's too much information for an SD card to be able to cope with that sort of throughput.
Yeah.
So why bother?
I mean, the other problem even on burst mode, though, the SD cards struggle, don't they? Sorry, Chris.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, that's one of the whole reasons they came up with the XQD card was just for that, you know, be able to burst high resolution images and stream HD video. So it makes sense from that perspective. I mean, from a technical perspective, it makes sense.
Well, I'll tell you something else they've done, which I think is really, really clever. I mean, other manufacturers may have done it. I just haven't followed it with them. What they've done with the video, they've got the full autofocus on video with your lens. But what they've done, they've, because of the amount of pixels needed for HD video isn't very high, they're using the way we talk about crop for zoom. So they're using that facility because they've got so many pixels over that you can go with a zoom of 2.7 magnification. But you're not actually zooming the lens. It's doing it by using more or less crop of the sensor as you zoom in and out. So with a fixed lens, you've actually still got the ability to zoom and keep 1080p video the whole way through. So it's like crop to zoom, but they're using the extra megapixels to do it. But while you're recording, it's doing it live through the camera.
Kev, are you interested in shooting any video with your DSLR now?
I've the only videos I do is with a regular video camera, and they're not for clients. So I don't really have a great need for it. I have used video for some high school senior portrait sessions where I'll mix stills and videos to create an Animoto slideshow for them. I don't sell a great deal of them. It's not a real. It's more time consuming than it's really worth for dollar. So I'm not, the video aspect isn't that great of an importance to me as it was the megapixel and the ISO range.
Chris, you were about to say something. Sorry, mate.
I'm sorry?
You were about to say something there, mate. Sorry.
Well, earlier I was just going to say that I find it interesting that you can put on the that you can adjust the crop format from full frame to the DX or APS-C style size.
Are they using that in for image stabilization as well? Potentially, because I mean that's the way that the image stabilization software tends to work. Is it crops and then allows the float point against a pixel that it's already taken.
I don't know if they're doing that or not, because you know Nikon, the VR lenses have the optical stabilization, which is actually superior anyway. So I don't know if they're doing that or not. I'm still trying to. This press release is really long.
It is. Yeah. No. I mean, we've been all the screwing around this morning. We haven't got to anywhere near as much of it as we should have.
Oh, there's a hell of a lot of little things. I mean, they're not little as in they're very genius things, but there's a hell of a lot of just bits and pieces going on in this camera it's mind-blowing for technical reasons.
Right.
They're basically taking some of the best optics in the world and one of the best cameras in the world and making it so good you could use it as a point and shoot and still get the most incredible photographs out of it.
I mean, the other thing...
Well, as we all know, P is for professional.
Absolutely. Research. Thank you, Missy. with this as well, though, you're talking about the video and the sensor being at 16 megapixels, but if they've got the ISO range that they're talking about here, which is equivalent 50 to 204,000, I mean, they've really improved the capture quality on the pixels, clearly then, to get that kind of level. So is this saying that actually the software blow-up, the digital blow-up that you'll get with the camera afterwards may compensate for the lack of pixels here, Alex?
Well, this is what they've written. They've basically said that, you know, they don't believe they need to go any higher than 16 megapixels because the quality is so much better that you can blow this up way past 100% because it's so much sharper in the original picture. I mean, that's what they're basically going on. I've been reading so many things about this camera. And it just, I can't get my head around. Normally you get a new camera come out and it's got one new thing that you think that's really clever. This has got so many new things that I'm sort of, wow. And how did they do that and keep it down at $6,000?
I think it would be safe to apply the term fanboy to you at this point, mate.
I'm sort of blown away. I'm actually blown away by it. One of the things I read earlier.
No, really?
People was at some magazine, I'd love to give them give the name, but I can't remember who it was. And they were saying that on the old Nikon D, I think it was a 3 or 3X, or they were saying you could go up to about 8,000 ISO before it got too grainy. And they're saying with this one, you'll at least be able to go up to 10 or 12,000 ISO before you start getting any grain problems.
At all, yeah.
What do you need? You can use a half-decent lens and still be able to shoot in the dark.
I mean, I tend to work on the principle that if I blow up an image off my camera, I can generally get up to about 140%, and then after that I start to notice the change in the grain and start to get a few problems of interpolation coming in. So, I mean, what kind of sizes do you guys blow up to before you start saying enough's enough?
I have to be honest. I haven't used a picture at wider than 640 pixels in like 3 years.
That's what you get for being a writer instead of a photographer now.
He specializes in stamps.
Yeah. What about you, Kev? If you're going up to blow an image up a bit, are you talking about what kind of percentage do you kind of sit comfortably with rather than
kind of percentage?
Yeah, no, if you're blowing up in Photoshop, so you're using bicubic interpolation, what kind of percentage do you... I mean, I tend to go by image size up to about 140% of original, and then I stop because I just know that it's going to get pretty grainy from that point going on.
Well, most of my work is studio. I'm shooting at 100 ISO. I print and send to the lab at 300 DPI, PPI, but, I have billboards on the highway that I do for politicians and stuff. I'm not having any problems with grains and things like that. But if that's what you're asking, I'm not sure.
I'm thinking of more like the cropping factors. So, you know, if you want to improve the size of your overall image for crop, I tend to allow myself to get to about 140% of original and then crop on that. Otherwise, it tends to get really grainy.
Yeah, I fill the frame and use the whole thing. I mean, mine's a 1.5 factor on both the D300 and the D2X. So I'm anxious to get into full frame. That's why I'm anxiously waiting for the D800.
Good. Right. Fujifilm have released an absolute pile. Are we surprised to see anything come before CES and not be announced at CES? Is this just press release, Phil?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be there next week checking this stuff out. But the XS1 is a pretty interesting camera, but the rest of it is just, I mean, I don't know. It's just whatever. I'm not, you know, I mean, these are all like mass market consumer cameras, and that's just never going to appeal to someone like me. It just never is.
They're far too high end, aren't they?
Yeah, it's 640 by 480. None of these does 640 by 480, dude.
Yeah. What a waste.
They're of no value to you at all.
You could get that through the viewfinder.
I'm gonna go back to my Olympus D200 from 1997.
Kev, I mean, you must get people come to you periodically when you're working with them saying, you know, I'm thinking of getting a camera for mother, sister, brother, father. Yeah, any recommendations? Is Fuji one of those grades that you've recommended or not?
I've never singled out a single camera. Typically, I'll send them to a website where I know I can go to Google and say, give me a camera between $500 and $1,000, and then send them a link to that page. Because, you know, there's a lot of
so you're no help at all, basically.
I don't mess with my wife's got a point and shoot. I don't have a point and shoot. I mean, if I want to carry a camera with me, I'm going to carry my D300 just because it's easy and it's got a pop-up flash.
Yeah, I mean, well, okay. We get a lot of questions saying, you know, I want a camera for, I got an email just before Christmas from a guy saying, I want a camera for around £250. Any recommendations for it? And I went off and I came back with three and said, I think these are your best choices and this is the one that I would choose. And it was the Nikon 3100, I think, compact. So, I mean, I get a lot of questions from listeners right in and also people, you know, down at the rugby club and other places where I go. So I'm surprised if you guys don't get the same kind of thing. And I've got to say, looking at some of the specs, some of these look like they're a good price and a good competition for the Nikons, Canons, and Panasonic Lumixes.
Look, in my house, other than my proper cameras, if you like, I have got three Fujis. And I've always bought Fujis as compact, and I've got an early bridge Fuji, and I've got two early bridge Fujis. And I've always found them, they were always really good at basic point and shoot. And I haven't broken them. I had a Casio, which I broke. I had a little Canon that are broke. These things seem slightly
Was that the camera's fault, though, dude?
Yeah, I mean, like the Canon I just dropped and the pop-out lens literally got touched and popped that was out. It. Well, it's got some horrible little terribly thin bit of plastic and that's like the ratchet that the lens comes out on. And I got to be honest, I took great pleasure in ripping it to bits by hand because I just always wanted to know what was inside one of those. I mean, I've always liked Fuji for point and shoot, but this is something we were talking about the other day off air that we get a lot of questions and, you know, sometimes a lot of criticism about our knowledge of cameras. But in our defense, I'd like to say that we're photographers. We don't work in a camera store. So I can tell you everything I know about Nikons because I use them. I can tell you a bit about certain cameras that I have used. But, you know, people want to say, oh, what about the Sony XYZ? Well, I've never used one. I can read about it and I can read what other people, professionals' opinion is. But when it comes to certain cameras, the chances are none of us would have ever held one or used one. We're better off asking people that aren't professional photographers because they can have a lot more idea about it than we are. So as far as these Fujis, I own a few of these type cameras and I could heartily say that the Fujis I've owned have always done exactly what I've expected of them, but I've never expected them to be as good as a professional Nikon. And that's the best answer I can give.
Well, no, I don't think of us do, but I mean, the thing is, I mean, Tech Radar is extremely good with its review process because it'll give you a whole pile of test shots and looked at the specs and then based on the test shots that you see at the various ISO settings, you can gauge the credibility of the camera that's in front of you, most definitely.
Yeah, agreed. But I mean, it's to be honest, part of that rant was answering the criticism we received that we don't know an awful lot about other cameras. Well, I'm not actually sure that is a criticism. No. We're just very honest and saying, no, we don't, because we don't own 700,000 cameras.
If I had anything to criticize Fuji here, it's why are they releasing 19 cameras? I mean, that's just...
Before CES.
Most people can't decide between 3 or 4 cameras. How are they supposed to decide between 19 different cameras? It's crazy.
Just pick your favorite color. There you go.
And that probably is the best answer you're going to get, actually. The thing is with Fuji...
I give up with you, buggers.
Yeah, the thing is, in all honesty, I think it's a good idea of Fuji releasing it now because of... And I'm going on about Nikon again, but CES, no one's going to get any publicity of the Nikon. Nikon have got the D4. I reckon they might still be holding the D800 for CES because of... Someone like Fuji might be going, you know what, we could release a gold-plated diamond camera for $5. Nobody is going to give a damn when Nikon release what they're releasing. It's like, why bother ever launching anything on the day that Apple are about to launch something? It's pointless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you want to get out there, you better get out there either before or 3 months after. So there you go. That's my reasoning anyway.
Yeah, but... I don't think it's entirely fair because what all these 19 different snapshot cameras, I mean, they're not going after anyone that's going to use a D4. You know what I mean?
No, but the people that print the magazines about cameras and the people that they're actually aiming at for publicity aren't going to give a two hoots about them when Nikon releases their bits. But I mean, Fuji, this is the area where Fuji have always been the strongest. It's the compact to bridge. They do very high-end compact cameras and very, very reasonable bridge cameras. And I would recommend them for that.
I think the thing that bothered me and the thing that I was most disappointed about is in all the cameras that they've released, not one single one of them does anything that's to do with integration with what people want to do with cameras at the moment, which is Flickr, Instagram, any of those kind of things. There's nothing that's going through with web connectivity. There's nothing that's trying to say, we've stuck a little Wi-Fi card in there, no Bluetooth. You know, the stuff that you really want is missing in modern cameras. And before, I think it was yesterday, I looked on the net and I found a picture of GPS data mapped over an image of the planet. And I don't know if you guys are watching the feed, but I've put the picture up now. And basically, it's GPS data received from EXIF data on images posted on Flickr and that kind of stuff. And it's just, here's the number of pictures that are being taken at midnight in China. And you could just see in the center of China, there is a blast of this concentration of people taking pictures all of a sudden. And by the time the whole planet's gone through midnight on New Year's Eve, the thing's just whited out like the whole planet's been covered in snow. Because people are taking pictures, and these are the pictures that are going on Flickr, Instagram. Now, that is a shed load of pictures. That is an enormous market for cameras to look for, and not one of these cameras is looking for it. That's sad. That's really sad.
Well, possibly they don't feel they can compete. I mean, how can you compete with the convenience of an iPhone? And let's face it, nearly every one of those pictures is going to be taken on some
smartphone, here's one way, aren't they? But I think this is what he's saying. The way to compete would be to integrate some kind of wireless connectivity where you can take the picture from a camera, not from a phone, but from a camera. And I know you guys have always argued that a real camera is better than an iPhone. Great, but the reason why I love using my iPhone is that the images are good enough for my own personal purposes, and most of those purposes are uploading to Flickr and Instagram.
So, no, I understand, but it goes back again to the argument that we've had a few times: is people taking 10 billion pictures because they happen to have a phone in their pocket? Would they actually bother to carry a camera if the camera had that function and facility? I don't believe the vast majority of those people would still carry a camera if it took the picture, printed it, put it in the frame, or put it next to their mum's bed for them. I think they'd still use a handheld.
I agree with you that a majority would not, but there's going to be definitely a certain percentage that would, and that market who might get a camera if they could have the convenience of a phone, they're just not being addressed, so they're just using their phone and not buying any cameras.
Sure. I mean, it is something that it would be sensible to look into, but possibly the cost would far outweigh what they believe would be the sale factor, you know?
Mm-hmm. You're not looking for the total market, though. You're only looking at the percentage market, aren't you?
Yeah.
You only want some of these people to be buying it. You're never going to compete on an iPhone level.
No, but I suppose, again, agreeing with Chris, as much as it pains me, these people, if they're going to buy a compact camera, they may buy the Fuji or whoever does it because it has that facility. Because a lot of people buy compact cameras and they don't really care whether it's any good or not. They just want to know what the functionality is. And if you could make a camera and you could put the tagline, it will put it on Flickr for you and you can take it in the dark and it will still be sharp and in focus, they'd buy it and they don't care what the figures are or possibly even what the price is. So that probably is a fairly good market.
Yeah. I mean, like one of these new Fujis, like one of the little snapshot ones, is like a 16 megapixel camera for, I think I saw, like under $200. But I mean, who does that serve? Who does that serve that wants a tiny little 16 megapixel camera? I don't see the point in having 19 different camera models.
Go ahead, Kev, you're about to say something there.
Can I chime in here? Because
if you're waiting to be asked, dude, you're going to be a long time.
talk right over us.
The thing that boggles my mind is that nobody's printing as much as they used to. And what do you need 16 megapixels if you're only going to put it on a 100 PPI monitor? I mean, Facebook is the new family album. That's where everybody's pictures are stored. If Facebook ever crashes, the whole generation's going to lose their photographs because nobody's printing what they're doing with these little images, whether it's coming from the iPhone or a point and shoot. They put it on Facebook, and that's basically the end result of a lot of consumer photographs these days. Unless they go to the trouble of printing their own prints or printing up, going to a photography studio where they specialize in printmaking. Digital format is where the image winds up, and you don't need more than 100 PPI for that.
Go on, Chris. Go on. Have your say, Chris. Go on. We're all waiting.
Yeah, what he said.
All right, we're done. Should we do some questions? Question one. Hey guys, I got myself a new / old camera for Christmas and wanted to do more than just point and shoot. Is there an online resource or book that you'd recommend to get me started with the basics? I bought a Canon 20D, if that helps. Thanks, Mark from Hungary.
Okay, well that then ruins my suggestion because he's in Hungary.
Okay.
If anybody's got a camera and they don't know how to use it, it's like hiring the A-team. But what you really want to do, you want to come down. I mean, I know I'm about to promote our photo book, but a really good place to learn anything. So if you've got a basic camera, even if you've got an iPhone, it doesn't matter what it is, go look in the paper, look on the internet, look for a local photo walk or something like that. Because if learning out of a book is all very good, but you're not going to be able to ask your book questions when you don't understand what that sentence actually means. Join a photo club. Go on a photo walk because there's people there that would love. We do it because we like taking pictures and we love to pass on our knowledge and say, actually, try that. You'll learn far more in a couple of hours walking with some people that are like-minded than you'd ever would do going on the internet or reading a book.
Mm. I'm going to say something similar too, and I don't, you know, I admit to knowing nothing. Literally nothing about the culture in Hungary, but you know, in my hometown, I used to teach a lot of like workshops and classes at like the local museum, at the camera store I worked at. We did some workshops. I also did a good friend of mine was a professional photographer, and he had a studio, and we would do these workshops where, you know, people would come in and I did like kind of the basic one. And then he did some of the, like, you know, how you set up your studio and do some lights kind of workshops. So yeah, I would just like look around, you know, maybe there's like an art center or just like a community center. They might offer some kind of workshop or class. And you know, like Alex said, he's just, if you get around people where you can ask questions and say, well, I tried this and someone else might have some advice or they might've tried the same thing. And you get a little more, the feedback is a lot different than what you can, you know, you can get the facts from a book, but having that personal feedback, I think it helps a lot of people.
Kevin, have you got any suggestions on that one?
Say it again.
Have you got any suggestions on that question?
No.
Okay.
Moving along.
I got asked years ago to look for a book for a guy, and I found a book that was called Teach Yourself Photography. It's in a Teach Yourself series kind of thing, and I looked for it on Amazon the other day for this guy Mark, and it's £2.95 at the moment, and it's really, really good. It really deals well with like imaging, optics, depth of field, that kind of stuff. It teaches you all the basic stuff, so go for that one. Teach Yourself Photography, £2.95 Amazon. I'll put the ISBN link in the show notes with Carl. There you go. I had an answer prepared, you buggers.
One thing I would suggest, and I do this myself, or I wouldn't suggest it, read the manual that comes with the camera first. I mean,
I've never done that.
You know, that's something a lot of people skip, and there's a lot of answers in there that'll help a lot of people, and germane to the camera that's in your hand, which is really something a lot of people just, you know, oh, gee, I never read the manual, and I wait until I have a problem, then I go look at it. No, read it first. I read it before. Read it as soon as I pull it out of the box. I sit down and read that manual. The first night I've gone through that manual.
Nerd.
I'll take that. I'll take that and wear it proudly when it comes to reading a camera manual.
Is
I do the same thing.
Is this an American versus Britain thing? Because I don't know about Alex, but I don't know any British guys who read manuals.
I don't even know what. I'm not sure what the manual is.
That's why you guys are always cocking up.
Manuals are for girls.
Exactly. Isn't that the stuff that you don't even bother taking out of the box when you throw it in the bin?
Yeah, it's the heavy thing, the big, thick, heavy paper thing. Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. That stuff that when you leave it on your desk for long enough, you then think, look, what the hell's. Oh, I'll just throw it.
This is a true story. I have used the manual that came with my Canon because it was about this thick. I've used that to stop a door open.
There you go.
I've never opened it apart from that. Question three. Hi, guys. Happy New Year. Thanks for all the shows last year. Please keep them coming in 2012. Will do, Ken. Thank you. My wife bought me a 10.5mm f2.8 fisheye for Christmas. I want to marry her already. He's put in brackets, I told her what to get, though. And I've been playing around with it, but I'm finding it difficult to get any shots that I'd call decent. It's just so different from anything I've ever used before. Any tips for getting started with, and or better shots with this type of lens? Chris?
So I just want to understand. You told her exactly what to get. She got exactly what you asked for, and now you're complaining?
I don't think he's complaining. I just think he's struggling.
No.
Any tips for fisheye photography?
Get really close. That works for actually any kind of photography. Yeah. Get closer, but you know, the fisheye doesn't have any rectilinear correction. So it exaggerates that wide angle distortion, and that is most exaggerated the farther away you are from something. The curvature is more. Perspective difference is more apparent the closer you get to something. The other thing that people use a fisheye for, like for instance, I've used it a lot when I did skateboarding photos, because you can hold it and just point it in the general direction of a skateboarder, and he's doing some kind of crazy trick going up in the air and flipping around or whatever, and you're going to get him in the frame. So I know like that in skateboarding, like they use fisheyes, or all the videos and all the photographers use fisheyes for that purpose, because you can get in a decent spot where you're not going to get run over with a skateboard, and just kind of point it in the general direction and not have to worry about precise framing all the time, because you know, the action's so fast, the trick's so crazy that you can't always, set up a shot and frame it perfectly every time. So it comes in handy for that, but just try to get closer to stuff and play with that perspective, that unusual perspective and the barrel distortion, and I think you might be happier with the results.
Cool. Alex, anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, the only time I've ever used a fisheye for anything sort of artistic, I think about it like, do you call it tic-tac-toe in America, noughts and crosses here, and you've got a 9x9 board?
Mm-hmm.
I try and get as much as I can in the center spot and as little as I can in the outside spots. Because I think with fisheye, what happens is if there's too much on the curvature on the outside, the whole picture starts to, I'm doing it with my hands again. The whole picture starts to look too complicated, too full. Everything is too out of perspective. But if you sort of use the middle of the picture as your focal point and let, you know, like a good one is fisheye for landscaping. If you focus on the main part of the picture being in the middle of the fisheye and let the sky and the ground be the things that are completely and utterly distorted away, then it doesn't interfere. A lot of people use fisheye, say, indoors, and there's too much going on around the center of that photo, and it becomes too complicated and it becomes too distorted for it to actually have any artistic value. Because let's face it, we don't use a fisheye because we're trying to reproduce what we've seen, unless we're incredibly drunk. or we only ever look out the peephole through our front door. That's the only two times where you see things naturally peephole. Fisheye. So what I'd suggest is make sure the outside extremities aren't too full of information, and then the whole thing won't be too confusing.
Kevin, anything to add?
Yeah, well, they use them a lot for weddings, I know. And I was a wedding photographer for many years, but I never owned a fisheye. The widest angle I used was a 20 millimeter or a 17 millimeter. But, they can be used very creatively in group or event environments, but I don't see a great deal of use for them in my business. I've gone with very wide angles and shot down on a photo on a child to get those big giant orb eyeballs and these little tiny bodies, and they're cute, but it's not something they're going to print out and send to grandma. So it's not often used in my business.
Right, no, they look more like something from Roswell if you go do it with a fisheye.
Yeah, I mean, my advice would be to follow exactly what Alex has said there to a degree. With fisheyes, I think the issue is dominance. You either choose to dominate the center of the image with the subject, or you choose to dominate the periphery of the image with like a tall building or a lamppost or something like that. Or as Alex said, the sky and the land then separate to become the dominance at the top and bottom of the image. But think center or think edge. But don't think general view. I think landscapes, like you said, Alex, landscapes are impossible. You can't shoot a decent landscape with a a fisheye. It's got to be something where there's dominance of center or periphery for me. There you go. Done.
That's me and you would agree, and already in 2012.
This is a year of love, mate. Oh, most dear, definitely. Dear. The Alex and you and love in.
Oh, I feel uncomfortable.
Ooh, can I get in that sandwich?
Ooh. Ouch. This podcast and many others would not be possible without UK2. We had a great year with them last year, and I'm talking to them in the next couple of weeks about signing up again for this year. They're going to continue to support us, I think, based on the emails I've been having with them for the coming year. And the reason is that you guys have supported them. If you support UK2 by going and buying their services, go to our website, bageltechnews.com, click on the click through, they'll know we sent you, and use the offer codes when you check out. Bageltech gets you 15% off, and Bagel DNS gets your domain management service charge removed entirely, which is about £15 or £20 on its own. So it's well worth it. You can use both codes as well. Don't think you just have to use the one. Please continue support UK2, because they make this possible, and without it we'd lose everything. Thank you, UK2. Finally then, Mr. Forsman, where can we get a hold of you, pal?
If you must, you can, I write for Ars Technica, as you mentioned before, so you can find my writing there. In fact, I just did a review of the Polaroid Z340. It's a new digital Polaroid, which I eviscerated. So arstechnica.com is a good way to get a hold of me. And if you like the Twitters, I am on the Twitters at Forsmac, F-O-R-E-S-M-A-C.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Cheers, mate. Yeah. Well done. Yeah. Alex, where can we get a hold of you, mate?
Just use Twitter, Alex G. Fox thing. That's it. Alex G. Fox. That's me, isn't it?
Have you?
What's the last time I looked? And we're doing some photo walk, but I'll let Ewan talk about that because I can't remember any of it.
Yeah, I'm trying to find a picture of Borough Tube Station. It's near Bank, isn't it?
No, Borough's south of the river.
Oh, I'm bloody useless in London. Never
it's
mind.
It's by London Bridge.
By London Bridge, yeah. But anyway, Kevin, where can we get a hold of you, mate?
Newsomestudio.com.
Good, mate.
That's my studio website. I've got a series of YouTube videos, YouTube/photog33. That's PHOTOG33. They're basically tongue-in-cheek satire videos that are really meant to open your eyes to some of the things that a lot of people whisper about, but for the large part are informational and meant in good taste.
Excellent. And if they need a photographer, where can they find you? At Newsom's, yeah,
Newsom's studio.
Excellent, mate. Thank you.
I remember.
Go on, Alex.
The Flickr Photo Group.
Yes.
Yes, there's a new topic for this month, picked by my 8-year-old, and the subject is heat.
Yep.
H-E-A-T, and he's really happy because of Ewan tweeted out his name on Twitter, and now he thinks he's famous. So he's really, really happy.
He is.
And he also said he's going to pick a winner, but there won't be any prize. So,
there you go.
You'll have the kudos of an 8-year-old liking your picture.
Excellent. I agree entirely. Perfect. as Alex was saying there, we've got the Flickr group. So sign up to that. Go to flickr.com/groups/bageltechphoto. Add yourself into it and then post images. And we'll have an assignment each month, which Alex and I have still got to catch up on. He did 9, but I didn't. And I need to do the last one. I can't remember the last one. Balls. I need to do that as well. And we've got Heat, which is James's this month. So James Fox, you are famous. Please do the Heat assignment. There we go. And we've got a photo walk. If you go to Borough Tube Station, and I've reliably informed by Google Maps that this is the picture of it, you'll be able to meet us there. I'm not sure what time we're meeting because I haven't seen any times yet. Do you know, Alex?
I think it's 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock. There we go. So
seems reasonable.
Yeah, I'm getting there for 10, so I've got some drinking time ahead of me.
Okay, and that is the 14th of January, which is a Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday the 14th of January. It's next weekend. So get yourself down to London, Borough Tube Station. I'm not sure the exact... we're in the bar, aren't we? The Meet Something Bar. Meet Porter's Bar. There we go. Was that right?
If you look on the Bagel Tech photo... if you look on the Bagel Tech photo page, I think there's...
It's got all the details, but it hasn't got the time. That's what threw me.
Ah, well.
There we go.
Can't have everything.
No, I'm just I want everything done. I want it all. We'll be back again next week with another BagelTech photo, and we'll be on with Mac in a few minutes. So thanks ever so much. See you next week. Bye.
Bandwidth and hosting for BagelTech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.